14th episode of Redemption. Today, we explore the strategic connection between deposit return systems and extended producer responsibility. In acronym land, that's DRS and EPR. For many policymakers, EPR for packaging and paper products offers a promise of financial relief from years of the budgetary burden of government-paid waste management, namely curbside recycling. Some think EPR should be implemented in place of DRS or before DRS can be considered. It's important to recognize that these two programs are not just fully compatible, but also better together. DRS is an EPR tool, one of the most effective and crucial tools because it covers a specific critical part of the packaging stream. Why have a specific program for separate collection and recycling of beverage containers? It's all about recovery rate. A modern DRS can achieve over a 90% recovery rate. While even in the best case scenario with curbside recycling programs, it's virtually impossible to achieve a 60% recycling rate when process losses are considered. In states without DRS, we see a beverage container recycling rate of only 27%. Internationally, curbside collection systems for PET plastic beverage containers achieve on average a 47% recycling rate, whereas DRS achieves 94%. Why should the U.S. take a cue from so many European countries who, after experiencing EPR for several decades, have now implemented DRS to enhance their system and achieve higher rates of packaging recovery and circular recycling? To answer that question, I talked to two experts in the field. My first guest is Mike Noel, Public Affairs Director for TOMRA. Thanks for coming on Redemption, Mike. Why are deposit return systems an essential component of effective extended producer responsibility?
Because they are the most effective way to collect and recycle beverage containers. Of course, EPR stands for extended producer responsibility. It's placing the financial responsibility for the end of life of a producer's packaging with the producer. And in this case, it has the additional aspect of requiring a deposit to be charged when a consumer buys the product in the first place. And that is the real difference between, say, a DRS and a EPR for packaging, which is primarily financing a curbside recycling system, which is complementary to a DRS, but it's not the same thing. So DRS is essential for EPR to work because it's an effective way. Placing a deposit and a motivation for a consumer to return the packaging is critical to reaching high recycling rates. And that's typically set in any type of EPR legislation, is readjusting the cost and collection of recycling to producers, but also asking that they reach performance targets. And DRS are able to achieve higher collection and recycling rates on average.
In the U.S., we're in early stages of passing EPR laws and implementing EPR for packaging. So what happens when you have EPR without DRS? What does that look like versus in jurisdictions, particularly in Europe, that have had EPR for years and then later on introduced DRS alongside their EPR for packaging system?
First, if you do, say, EPR instead of DRS, EPR for packaging, you know, via curbside instead of DRS, or without DRS, then essentially these jurisdictions are settling for a mediocre beverage container recycling rate. So I think I'm quoting from the most recent report that ReLoop put out, but in Ontario, it's a perfect example. The state has a DRS on alcoholic beverages, and they have an EPR for packaging program on the remaining beverage containers. Those containers that have a deposit have a 78% rate of return, and those in the EPR system have a 46% rate of return. So you're kind of settling for a mediocre recycling rate. And that's substantial for, you know, there's a federal proposal for EPR and DRS in the US right now. And if the beverage containers, they get put into the EPR program instead of DRS, you know, you could be settling for a 46% recycling rate. We consume billions of containers each year. That would be accepting essentially about $15 to $27 billion of wasted water bottles. So that's the difference between EPR and DRS.
You mentioned Ontario and the stark difference in the return rate or the collection rate between the two systems. But it also seems to me that it doesn't end there, right? What can you expect from a DRS versus from curbside EPR?
Sure. Yeah, that's the other major benefit of DRS is just that the containers that are collected are more likely to be recycled and more likely to be recycled into high quality products, or what I think most of us consider recycling, which is recycled back into the same product or one of similar high quality. So also known as closed loop recycling. I mean, I can speak to the containers that Tomra picks up, which is likely the majority of the containers redeemed throughout the Northeast US's deposit system. And we are able to recycle virtually all of the containers. And the majority of these containers, aluminum, glass, and PET, are going back to beverage containers or products of similar high quality. And the situation is particularly stark when you look at glass. When, you know, the US transitioned to largely a single stream operation, it kind of left glass in a lurch. When glass is put into a single stream container, it breaks. It often contaminates the other materials in the bin. And it's very hard to sort once it's combined like that. And it's certainly not going back to glass containers. There was a survey done of a number of MRFs in the Northeast. And of those who responded, about 40% of their glass, you know, this is glass that actually consumers actually put into the curbside recycling bin, about 40% was either going straight to landfill or being, you know, sprinkled on top of a landfill as alternative daily cover or ADC.
We like to call modern deposit return systems an example of recycling with results. And I think it's hard for us to imagine that EPR for packaging, while important, certainly important for municipalities as a funding mechanism or a way to alleviate budgetary pressure that running curbside programs inevitably presents, particularly post China the National Sword, but EPR for packaging alone just can't deliver the same kind of outcomes. What would you say to those who are pushing for EPR legislation rather than bottle bills, or saying, you know, let's do EPR first?
Let's say you establish an EPR system and then consider, well, maybe a deposit system can be added later on. Just the financial incentive there is going to really just going to create like a magnet kind of situation where the PRO managing the EPR for packaging program is going to try very hard to keep beverage containers in the system because there's material revenue from aluminum beverage containers and PET containers in a good year for PET. But then that messes up the incentives, right? Then it's a cost equation to keep beverage containers in kind of this, you know, frankly, mediocre collection system at the expense of the environment and littering, right? So that's why there's a logic to either keeping the two systems separate or perhaps establishing a deposit system first and then an EPR later. Let's say a brand new deposit system and a brand new EPR system were adopted at the same time. The rulemaking for EPR takes much longer or several years longer. So you can actually establish a full-blown deposit system within about 2 years, whereas EPR rulemaking is far more complex. There's more stakeholders involved, more infrastructure involved. And so you can get a jump on beverage container waste earlier with the deposit system as well. So there's a timing and impact factor.
The guide and the sample rollout plan we include in it, because it really does conclude very similarly the point you make, the ability for municipalities to see some savings and for some of this producer funding to kick in much more quickly because the rulemaking and the system design and planning and implementation can happen in under 2 years. And as you said, best case scenario for EPR, we're talking 4 or 5. So that is a really significant factor for decision makers to weigh. DRS and EPR are not just acronyms to someone operating a recycling center. That's why I wanted to talk with Lynn Hoffman, Vice President of Eureka Recycling, a nonprofit zero waste organization and social enterprise recycler based in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Lynn is also the national coordinator for AMBER, the Alliance of Mission-Based Recyclers. Lynn, you see the potential for DRS and EPR to impact your operations in so many ways. Why and how should these two programs work together?
Yeah, well, I think the way that EPR should fold in and support the recycling system with DRS is that, in theory, EPR is paying for the cost of recycling for the end of use of these products, right? And so the concern for MRFs, the very real concern, the way that the model is built now is that we rely on the revenue from the sale of materials to in part subsidize the operations because it's getting more and more expensive to recycle. labor, equipment, material, the ton is evolving quickly, the capital needs for MRF's insurance could be a whole different podcast. But that price tag is too big for municipalities to float by themselves. It's not reasonable for them to have to do that either. And so EPR brings the producers in to put some skin in the game, which is really important. And what that can do is support the full cost of recycling those materials and take away that vulnerability of the commodity prices and relying on the revenue of the sale of materials. And that's a down the road. That's the goal, the place to get where EPR is. We've made it through the transition. DRS is doing its job and we're capturing 80-90% of beverage containers or more. EPR is covering the full cost of recycling everything else that's recyclable. From here to there, all kinds of things will shake out and all kinds of thought needs to be put into that transition. MRFs don't turn on a dime. It's a big, complicated system. It's expensive. It's a couple $1 million to put in an optical sorter. It's a year-long wait and then a couple months for it to install, right? And MRFs are built on particular composition of the basket or the pile on the tip floor. And so if you significantly change that composition, take a lot of containers out, for example, it's not going to run through your system well. You got to optimize the system for the composition that you have. And that's going to be changing pretty significantly with the implementation of DRS.
How might you make the case for DRS alongside EPR?
Well, I mean, I think DRS is EPR. It's another version of it, right? This is another way for producer responsibility. And I think it's proven to be an alternative collection method that works much better for certain materials than the ones that we're using now. And so, you know, I think we have to get out of the mindset that we need to preserve the recycling system as it exists now. We need to evolve it and we need to do it in a way that's thoughtful and doesn't have unintended consequences. But I think EPR, good EPR, should be inclusive of other alternative collection systems with the caveat that they perform, right? We're not talking like mail back your pouches and Capri Sun pouches and make a backpack, not like that. We're talking like at scale, actual capture, actual recycling.
High recovery rates, easy exactly. For consumers to use. Yeah.
Exactly. You know, and EPR is in its infancy in the US, so we don't actually know, but it seems unlikely that it's going to drive the kind of capture rates that DRS does. While it can build in education and access, the behavior change, the draw of that refund is missing in the current system. So again, EPR can cover the current system, but DRS is another, I think, tool in the tool belt, another way for producers to be responsible for improving recycling that should be implemented when it can.
Thanks to all our listeners who are so committed to learning about modern deposit return systems and the environmental and economic benefits they bring to our communities. In this 14th episode of Redemption, Mike Noel at TOMRA made a compelling case for putting DRS in place before an EPR program, while Lynn Hoffman from Eureka Recycling talked about how a modern DRS can really optimize the system, especially with its ability to capture 90% of beverage containers. Thank you for joining us at the Redemption Podcast. In future episodes, we will continue to explore other critical aspects of DRS and beyond. In the meantime, don't forget to visit Bottle Bill Reimagined to download the guide to modern deposit return systems or subscribe to our newsletter, Bottle Bill Common Ground. You can also leave a review on Redemption wherever you listen to your podcasts. And remember, working together from a common ground of knowledge about what makes a modern deposit return system work, we can move good bottle bills forward.